My name is Susan Lindauer. I am a former CIA and Defense Intelligence asset. I worked in anti-terrorism covering Iraq, Libya, Syria, Lebanon in the 1990s. I negotiated the Lockerbie trial with the Libyan ambassador, and I negotiated the return of the weapons inspectors to Baghdad with Iraq's ambassador. I came out. I was one of the very few voices against the Iraq war, shouting from the rooftops against the groupthink that was driving the United States to war. I was then arrested on the Patriot Act, thrown in prison for a year, held under indictment for 5 years. Though there was a categorically, I never spied for the Iraqis. I never received monies from the Iraqis. But the fact of my opposition and the knowledge that I possessed, because I was directly involved in all these issues, was so scary to the elite that they kept me under wraps. And so I actually have a very unique position, especially with regards to Syria and Lebanon. Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar Assad, once put a contract out on my life through his government did, through Manzer al-Qasar. Ahmed Jibril and Abu Nidal put a contract out on me with Manzer al-Qasar, who was later arrested and extradited to the United States. He did 20 years in prison, and while I was under indictment, he was put in the courtroom right next to mine. So he was assigned to the courtroom next to mine for trying to kill me while the United States government was denying that I was a CIA asset. And so it was very, this is actually very important, because the chaos that these people create, and the degree of dishonesty, I hope and pray for the sake of the Syrian people that they're going to be okay through this. I have my brother's ex-wife is a Syrian refugee, dissident, who hated the government of Bashar al-Assad. And I am myself anti-war, deeply anti-war, lifelong anti-war, anti-violence. So I have a very complex opinion of what's happening in Syria. I have always opposed U.S. military intervention in Syria. I am very deeply aware of Syria's relationship with Iran and its client state status, that Lebanon was a client state of Syria during the civil war of Lebanon. This is a lot more complicated than I am very suspicious whenever someone, the elite media, the corporate media, give me a pat answer telling me that they've accomplished something really great and that everything's going to be okay now. Oh no.
Before we get into this, do you mind explaining how did you become a CIA asset and what is a CIA asset? Many of us here see the Central Intelligence Agency as a major problem in the world, the most important aspect with the MI6 and the Mossad of the deep state, completely unaccountable thing. But they have military officers, and asset is something a bit different, I think, isn't it? I'm just imagining, because you know, we get on fine, you're a very affable person. I would imagine that you've got your kind of spooks and the spooky characters behind the scene, and you were acting as a kind of front person for them.
Exactly.
But, so, can you explain how you got into all this?
I gave advance warning about the 1993 World Trade Center attack. And when I did that, I came to the attention of the spooks. Okay. They then realized that I had the capability to interact with governments. And they fielded me because I am anti-war and anti-violence. Hmm. They discovered in a brief moment of sanity that if you actually speak to the Arabs and oppose killing their own children, if you can say to an Arab, which I can, I am opposed to killing Arab children and American children and British children, then you're going to get a lot better cooperation in terms of identifying problems that everyone needs to solve.
Yeah, and I think of Lawrence of Arabia, right? The Brits sent him out there, didn't they, between the two world wars. And he struck up a genuine friendship and with the Arabs. And what happened? Well, they just double-crossed him. They said, well, actually, we're not going to be doing all the things you promised with the Arabs. We're going to set up a Zionist state here, which the Arabs. So he then has a motorbike accident and dies, unfortunately. Luckily, that didn't happen to you, but quite obviously.
Well, I was
Do you think there's a bit of a similarity there?
Yes. Yes. Very, very definitely. I was frequently compared to him. And, but the Arab governments actually respect people who oppose violence, because those are, they, even though you citizens are told that these are pro-terrorist governments, they don't see themselves as pro-terrorist governments. They are liberation, freedom-oriented governments. And if you are under attack, then you're going to fight back. And that is what you need to, that everyone needs to understand. Now, I ended up being arrested on the Patriot Act. I was the second non-Arab American ever arrested on the Patriot Act. Secret charges, secret evidence. My judge in my case was Michael Mukasey, who became the U.S. Attorney General. And it was while he was Attorney General that he referred back to my case and to my case in front of his court, and went and arrested Mansour al-Qassar, who is about to get out of prison. And he was a Lebanese businessman, arms trader, who was accused of conspiring with the drug cartels in Latin America to assassinate U.S. agents, which I would have been. So he actually was arrested for trying to kill me while I was in the courtroom next door and the CIA was denying who I am. Okay, so now you have the same CIA. Let's jump forward. And we've got today, we've got the Israeli government celebrating the fall of Bashar Assad, bombing 500 sorties in Syria. They are wiping out Syria's capability to mount a defense. So Syria is now a defanged, or it's in the process of being defanged. Turkey has its own objectives. It wants to be part of NATO. It wants to be part of the European Union. And they do not want to see the Kurdish independence ripping apart. Now, I see the biggest losers in this as the Kurds. The Kurdish people, John McCain and Joe Biden, envisioned breaking apart Syria, Iraq, and Iran, and forming Turkey and forming a Kurdish nation from each of those pieces. And that, I think, is going to be the big loser in this. And that's probably good, because that means that the Kurdish people are on the way out. Trump does not have the stomach for meddling inside Syria, but the United States still controls Syria's oil
field. Well, look, there's so many different ways into this, Susan. I hope we can try and look at them all, you know, different perspectives from different planets, really looking down on Syria. What about, you know, the you talking about Turkey there reminds me that in the First World War, we had this General Allenby, the British sent down there. And in the fighting seasons of 1917 and 1918, there were two massive campaigns with hundreds of thousands of casualties where the British army pushed the Turks north. Now, I wonder whether Erdogan and other Turkish people, I mean, of course, in those days, it was called the Ottoman Empire. The Turks are now looking at this land called Palestine. There were two massive battles. I think in 1917, it was the Battle of Gaza. That's right. It was the Battle of Gaza. It was a big battle. And then there was another battle the year after called the Battle of Megiddo, where the Brits pushed all of these Ottoman soldiers, we're mostly on horseback and stuff in those days, out, right out up to Turkey, where Turkey is now. So surely the Turks are looking at this to a certain extent, Susan, and thinking, well, okay, now the Brits are not a major power in the world anymore. Okay, so 100 years has gone by, but we're having this land back, thank you.
Yes, I think that's, yes. Yes, yes. And they're now looking at Syria's relationship with Lebanon, and they're seeing that Turkey could now take over Syria's land and control it the way that Syria has controlled Lebanon. Now the Turkish government is going to have, with its Free Syrian Army, will now assume that responsibility, where Syrian will no longer have the autonomy and independence, and they will be turning to Erdogan and Istanbul for directions and guidance in their policies.
Yes, yes. So Erdogan is making exactly a big fuss about Gaza on the TV, yes, there around the world, saying, isn't it terrible what's happening in Gaza? But secretly, he's quite happy to cooperate with the Israelis to get back land.
Yes. I think that is exactly true. And I think that Jalani, I don't know if you heard, I'm sure you did hear this, that he had said that first we're going to Damascus, then we're going to Jerusalem. And I think that this is going to be a big, Turkey is, you know, I and again, I think that you have the expectations of the Syrian people that they've gotten rid of Bashar Assad, and they are accustomed to independence. They are accustomed to sectarian tolerance. And now they're going to have the Jalani crowd, the ISIS fighters, former al-Nusra, former reformed al-Qaeda coming in, and all of a sudden they're not going to be the Taliban any longer. And does the Taliban ever stop being itself? I don't think it works that way. They're already saying that there are retribution killings, that there are shootings, that they promised amnesty for Syrian soldiers, and then the Syrian soldiers are capitulating and surrendering, and then they're being executed on the spot. And so this is already the kind of the mythos that they're trying to create of openness is already starting. It's collapsing. And I feel deeply sorry for the Syrian people because, you know, the one thing that does hold true, apparently, is what my sister-in-law always said, which was Hafez al-Assad is disappearing our people. They're ending up in prisons and detentions. And she was unhappy that we did not, not liberals is not the right word, but advanced intellectual people who consider ourselves contemporary historians, I'll call us that, not liberals, contemporary historians, were not acknowledging the real facts of the hardships and the fear and the tyranny of the Assad government, because we were correctly pointing out the fact that the government, that the chemical weapons story was a false flag lie to justify the war. It was a lie, never happened. The beheading videos featured the white helmets, who either they were carrying out atrocities of their own or they were false videos. Fake videos, and I hope they were fake. But there was a lot of, you know, then you also have the legitimate ISIS fighters who were terrorizing the public and in the areas that they controlled, and they had to be driven out. And so Bashar Assad, you know, the John McCain, Joe Biden crowd who supported the Kurdish rebels. Stupidly, Joe Biden wanted to break apart Syria. And so the fact that Joe Biden is involved in this at all, wanted to divide up Syria, wanted to divide up Iraq and create a whole new country there, I think you are seeing an accelerationist time to the end times, because it's just moving to extreme chaos. But fortunately, the one positive in this is that Turkey will not allow the Kurdish fighters to establish a separate country. So then will the Kurdish fighters try to take over and continue on this battle without Turkey's consent? Will the Free Syrian Army capitulate to Turkey and a Western, positive Western, quote, positive Western mode where they allow women to hold jobs and women to go out without their escorts and to do all the things that modern women in Syria are used to doing. Will all of that continue or not? I don't think we have an answer yet.
Well, we'll see. There's a couple of things I'd really like to get into, one by one, if you don't mind. Sure. One is this whole idea of balkanizing the Middle East, which has quite clearly been spelt out by the Israelis and others. This is what they want to do. They want porous borders. They want failed states. The main objective, which is for a greater Israel. This whole map of the greater Israel was, if you look at what the greater Israel bloc now in control, the far right in Israel, the map they're using is actually a British map from 1922, which then there was a big hoo-ha in Britain about that. They said, no, they can't have so much land. So Jordan was ceded to become its own state temporarily. And this is why the Jordanians kicked off last year in 2023 and said, hang on a minute, you know, you've got this map that they're now using in Israel, which it wipes out Jordan, you know. So they started making a bit of a fuss, but that kind of went away. So there's this whole idea of balkanizing. But first of all, I'd like you to just explain a bit about these jihadis, because there is this whole heartstring thing, which brings a lot of Muslims, you know, with good intentions, I think, over to that part of the world, saying, actually, this is part of the prophecies of Islam. And if we go to that part of the world, we will be able to actually make the world a better place and get rid of the Zionists and bring the Middle East back to, you know, faith and God and this sort of thing. So it's very clever, it seems to me, what's being done here. Which is to get into people's heads and say, well, look, you know, by joining up, and I imagine in the old, you know, previously this was groups like ISIS, by joining these groups, that you can actually make the world a better place. And I'd like to know a bit about this latest character, if you how much you know about it, Abu Muhammad al-Jilani, because he's one of these, you know, types that's been mustering all these Muslims who've been going over there, but also about the origins of this whole thing, because they seem to have emerged, these jihadis, really since maybe the 1980s, somewhere around about that time. So can we just start with looking at the radical Muslim thing? And you would probably call them more than radical. They're Islamists. They are head choppers as well. They don't seem to mind killing someone if that person doesn't agree with them.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And they're coming in from all over the Arab world and all over, you know, they're coming from Malaysia and India and Pakistan. They're Libya fielded, you know, the largest camp of foreign fighters in Iraq was coming out of Libya. And what you see is that these are disaffected young people who have, they're, it's almost like a pilgrimage. It's part of their Hajj culture that they're going to Mecca, and then they go to Mecca, they go to Medina, and then they go on the jihad to prove their loyalty to God. And they are motivated to something that is totally antithetical to what Turkey's objectives are. They are not going to bow down to Donald Trump and Bibi Netanyahu. They have a different expectation entirely of what Syria is going to accomplish, which is location. They want to go in and get revenge for Gaza. And Gaza specifically is hideous.
But revenge isn't, you know, it's just going to leave everybody dead, isn't it? To what extent do you think this whole jihadi thing is something which is acceptable in mainstream Islam, or is it completely separate? Is it a Western created version of Islam?
No, it's very real. It is very authentic to the truest young. It is the sacrifice of your life to God. And it is sort of a rite of passage for all young Islamic men to go through this. But it is not an accident. Watch the real estate that Israel is claiming. They have just moved into the highest point on the Golan and taken over. They're cementing their control over the Golan Heights, and they've moved into a position where they have a view of Syria's land beneath that they can look down and see the layout and the scope of movement across the cities, and that they can see the territory below and watch that, because they know that what the jihadists want are now very different than what the Turkish government wants. And that is the problem here. The Balkanization is that Erdogan has an expectation that Syria will be submissive and the Free Syrian Army will bow to Istanbul and it will be a client state. The United States thinks that they're still going to control the oil in Syria. And the Syrian people think that they're going to make decisions on who is in their country and who is not. And that each of these players at this moment has very different expectations of what this war has actually accomplished.
Well, look, you mentioned Libya, Susan, you mentioned Libya, and a lot of these jihadis are from Libya. That is an absolute basket case now. Actually, Gaddafi was running a pretty tight ship, and I think was a very successful and compassionate leader. A lot of people think he was a sort of tyrant, but I looked at Libya in those days as a place which was, you know, it was independent minded. Gaddafi, and his green book was very sort of halfway between capitalism and communism somewhere, a bit like Tito or somebody like that, where he decided, look, we're going to actually make sure that we don't have any homelessness here. We're going to have a brilliant high-tech water purification system. He did loads of stuff. And in fact, he was even trying to get this African gold dinar going, which was a gold-backed currency just for Africa to sort of get rid of the post-colonial, neo-colonial slavery that the IMF and the European and United States countries and were doing to Africa. So an interesting character. But that country's now an absolute mess, a basket case mess with warlords. So, I mean, is that, do you think, the model that Syria is going to follow? Because if you think about it, you had the Libyan overthrow of Gaddafi, and loads of these people, as you said, went over to Syria and tried to overthrow Assad last time. They couldn't. Is it 2011, 2012? And
he ended up flying a lot of the Syrian fighters into Libya so that they would be removed from the Turkish territories and would be pushed out into northern Africa, where he gave them a free rein, he thought, to explode into Egypt and Tunisia. And so the idea was that the Turkish Ottoman, again, Turkish expansionism, the Ottoman Empire would rise from Libya and expand up north and down south, covering that entire coast, Algeria, Morocco, and that whole.
So you're saying that was Gaddafi's plan?
No, that was Erdogan's plan.
Okay.
See, and Erdogan was doing exactly there what he's doing right now, thinking that he was going to expand his territory. And of course, what you described about Libya is exactly what has happened. It has become balkanized and controlled by warlords. So they've got slave markets, and nobody can, the West, it's a disaster. It's a failed state now. Libyan oil money is now controlled out of Egypt, ironically. But you see that Erdogan has not learned his lesson, and now he's doing the same thing in Syria. But he expects that's the expectation, and he has not learned his lesson. And I think what you're seeing in Syria will be I see the Arabs flooding into Syria. I see the Arabs flooding into Syria for the sake of taking on Israel. I think Israel has made I think this is the high point of Israel's success. I think they have made a gross miscalculation, because Assad would not, now this was one thing that Hafez al-Assad and Bashar al-Assad both, and whether you like them or not, they both refused to allow their territories to be exploited by the jihadists for attacks on Israel. This was the one ironclad rule that they had, was that they would never tolerate any foreign entity or any civilian forces to use their territory isn't to attack Israel. And now the people who you've handed this off, who have been handed this country, their entire reason for existing is to attack Israel. And you can say the Western media, the Los Angeles Times, the BBC can tell you anything about these people, and they can say, oh, they're not going to behead anybody anymore. Oh, women aren't going to wear the hijab anymore. They're going to be much more tolerant. But the one thing that these people, and that may be true, but the one thing that these people will never do is give up their fight against Israel. And they are going to be more open, because they're going to be more open to the women, to all the different cultures coming in for jihad on Israel. And I really, truly believe that you are going to see a major confrontation now, because the old saying, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. The Arabs have watched for a year while Israel committed genocide and war crimes against Gaza and the Palestinian people. Whether you like the Arabs or not, that is genocide. Those are war crimes. This is an extermination policy. Well, and they had to remove Assad in order. And so each of these expectations are different. Turkey thinks they're going to control Syria. Syria thinks they're going to be independent and is determined to continue to be independent as a nation. They're very highly educated people. They are not going to allow to bend the knee to Erdogan. They are not going to allow themselves to be a caliphate any longer. That will not happen.
So yeah, look, you're quoting Sir Isaac Newton there with these equal and opposite reactions, right? And I think that these things, I mean, seeing what's happened to Syria, this extraordinary collapse, this is not about Syria, really. It seems to me it's about the great power players in the world. And it's happened at a fascinating time, hasn't it? You've got Donald Trump hanging around, is it Mar-a-Lago or somewhere like that, where he's sort of getting all of his ducks in a row, you know, ready to go. It seems pretty obvious to me that for the Russians to pull out of there, they went in, I think it was 2014, the Russians, mainly with the Air Force, in order to support Syria, because they have a Tartar naval base and they've got a tradition. The Soviet Union was allied with Syria back in the Cold War, for example. But the Russians seem to have gone, I look at that and think, well, maybe Trump has done some sort of deal over Ukraine where he said, well, I'm quite happy to make sure that we stop any money going to Zelensky. We just basically drop them in it, you know, after all these deaths of young Ukrainians, but only if you're prepared to pull out of Syria. And I wonder whether you think that some sort of deal like that's being done, because it's such an interesting time that this happened. It's the interregnum, you know, between the two emperors, you know.
Yeah. And we're coming out of a very weak 4-year mediocrity, a vacuum of leadership in Washington. And Trump, and they have moved on this. I think that Biden was not consulted in this. I don't think that Biden knows what's happening. I don't think he ties his shoelaces anymore. And I think that Turkey made its move pretending to be a friend of Washington with, again, everyone has an expectation. None of these expectations match one another. So these are only temporary alliances. And I think that Russia could not afford to alienate Trump. And Russia is looking for a solution in Ukraine. They're saying that Ukraine was part of the jihadi fighters against Assad. But Ukraine thought, the Zelensky crowd was hoping to push Russia to be divided so that it would be torn between fighting in Syria and fighting in Ukraine. And they have, and Russia pulled the plug on them. Essentially stopped Russia stopped them from messing around with that, because they're looking at Trump and they don't want to get overextended, and they don't know what Trump's policy is going to be. All they know is that he's pro-Israel, so they don't want to be caught in a war defending Syria when Israel's on the opposite side at this point of time. So I think that Putin is trying to play four-dimensional chess as well. And they're all guessing what Trump is going to do. Trump is going to assert power as hard power as fast as he can to take back the power vacuum left by Joe Biden. And he's totally pro, blindly crazy pro-Israel, just crazy pro-Zionist all the way. You just can't, Israel cannot do anything wrong. And so,
well, they can, so, can't they? So he's crazy.
Of course they can. Of course they can.
I mean, look at what's happened over the last 6 months or so. I mean, this surely should matter for something. And of course it does. What about, look, I look at Russia and I think you can't really afford to pull out of the Eastern Mediterranean, Russia. You know, you've got problems in Georgia. Georgia's on the sort of main road from Moscow down to Damascus. And, it might be that by pulling out of Syria and out of the Eastern Mediterranean, potentially, you don't want to have to steam your little ships all the way through the Bosphorus or even round, you know, the North Atlantic through past Gibraltar. And that way, if you want to have any power in the Mediterranean, it might be that the Russians have also decided that sea power isn't really, doesn't really count for very much anymore when you've got hypersonic missiles that can sink a ship in a few seconds. So what do you make of, do you think the Russians, this is the main question, do you think the Russians have given up on the Middle East for good? Or may they be back in much more force? Because they were only kind of there in a very half-hearted fashion, weren't they?
Yeah, I think that they've pulled back from Syria. I agree with what you're saying. I agree.
Will they be back, do you think? I mean, I look at it and I think, well, if I look in Putin's brain, right, if I dare, Putin, that strange Putin, place, I'm looking at him thinking, well, it was never very good for us to be half in the Middle East and half out. Either we should be fully in or fully out. And maybe at some point we will go fully in. But at the moment, not. Definitely not. It might simply be that they're just trying to kind of consolidate themselves and let other people fight it out. So what do you reckon?
But if you look at what's going to happen in the Middle East, there's going to be a major regional war, and Russia does not want to be on the ground tied down with Syria or Libya or Iran when all or Lebanon when the hell breaks loose and World War III erupts. Because that's how this could explode.
Maybe. Simple. And actually, Russia itself is a long way away, thousands of miles away from, well, 1,000 miles roughly away from all this. So why don't they just, yeah, maybe. They can see this coming and they just decided, right, let's get out of it.
This is the time to pull out of the Middle East, because there's going to be a conflagration and they don't want to be trapped in under it. The one exception, I think, will be BRICS. Because they have invited Iran and Saudi Arabia and Egypt, Jordan, to be part of the BRICS nations. And those countries have already received invitations to join BRICS. And then they will look at an economic dismantling of the global power of the United States that will be non-military. And that is the best way to take down the United States, is through the power, through the economic, removing the economic power of the United States. But I think that anybody who, like the United States, would be foolish. Everyone should be foolish. Europe should be foolish to try to mess around in Syria right now. This is a dangerous place that is going to explode. And Turkey is going to handle it, is probably foolish as well. That they're pushing forward like this. That what I see is the jihadists never change their stripes. They have to. This is part of their rites of passage in Islam, and they don't ever back down from their jihad. If they have their sights on Jerusalem, they have their sights on Gaza, and they are going to, this is going to explode in the next 12 months. Now that does not mean that the Free Syrian Army will become ISIS all over again or Al-Qaeda all over again. They may very well have learned their lesson. They may have learned that if they're going to have a real war against Israel, they have to be inclusive of all the different cultures and all the different Islamic religious sects and cultures that are coming in, all the nationalities. And so they may be much more, much less purist on Islam than they were before, but it never changes that they want the jihad. That is a rite of passage for young men, period. Doesn't matter.
It's generally more, takes more of a sort of Christian tradition looking at this. And Damascus is a very interesting city in the book of Acts. I think it's chapter 9 with Saul and his conversion on the road to Damascus. You know, this guy who's absolutely one of the biggest persecutors, a very powerful, very strong man, persecutors of the Christians, has this amazing kind of experience, sort of supernatural experience on the way to Damascus to go and persecute the Christians there. And he becomes one of the great evangelizers and writers in the early Christian church, right at the very start, really. And so Damascus is obviously a place where things can change, things can turn. It's one of those areas that seems to be, you know, sort of a tug of war going on for control of it, you know, from the
Syria.
Hang on, because I want to ask you about this whole idea of the accelerationists, the Armageddonists. You're talking about a really, I mean, we've got China now supporting the Palestinians. We've got the United States supporting Israel. If there's a major conflagration there that starts to run out of control, remember we've got nuclear weapons in the mix too, then the Americans and the Chinese, this could be actually a spark for a third world war. Now, yes. God knows where that's going to go. We could be looking at a kind of Armageddon here. This is why the Russians want out, obviously. Yeah, definitely. Everyone who's got any sense should want out. In fact, lots and lots of Jews have been leaving Israel. Many more than has been reported. So what do you make of this sort of Armageddonist perspective on all this?
I think that Israel is already much more isolated than they realize. The Europeans are not going to rush in to save Israel. The Trump people will try to save Israel. They will provide weapons to Israel. But we are bankrupt. We are a bankrupt nation. We don't have the financial resources to continue to provide this sort of support that we've done in the past. And we are, Trump threatens sanctions and threatens tariffs on other nations. We've got to be worried they're going to impose sanctions on us. You know, I don't know that we have the power, the hard power that we think we do any longer. So, but I think the Russians have the right idea. I think that Turkey, and I think that Turkey is playing at both sides. They're trying to support Gaza. They're trying to be perceived as the leader against, again, like you just said at the start of this, they're, on one hand, they're tolerating Israel's bombings of Syria, but they also are trying to say that they're huge defenders of Gaza and the whole Middle East. So, I mean, I think that everyone else will be pulling out, and Israel's going to be realized one day that they are alone, and the United States does not have the power to support them any longer.
Well, maybe, although the Brits, and there are all sorts of Christian Zionists around the West who are in very powerful positions, and the Zionist lobby controls a hell of a lot when it comes to finance, when it comes to government finance, when it comes to media as well. They've got a lot of sway. I can't see the US pulling its financial support for Israel or the bombing support, you know, the munitions being sent there anytime soon. So anyway, how do you see this sort of conflict between the jihadis that are starting to gather and Israel? Because it seems to me Gaza is almost like a provocation that's a fuse which is burning away. And at some point it's going to go bang down there, and it's going to start running out of control, as wars often do.
Yes, it is going to. Yes. And that's what I see this as, the first act. I see this takeover of, because Bashar Assad would never allow Syria's territory to be used against Israel. Never. That was one absolute that they had. One absolute rule under Hafez and Bashar. They would never allow it. And now they've lost control of it to the very people who are setting up an attack on Israel. And I think that this will be a major regional conflagration I think that in 12 months from now, it's going to consume. It will consume them.
So. I mean, even if it just consumes that region, I mean, it's going to drag in the superpowers, surely.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think Russia's smart to pull out. Russia's like, we're not going in. We're not going to do it.
Well, Trump, his attitude is very pro-Israel. I mean, the Chinese, if they start trying to intervene at all there.
I don't think China will intervene either. I think that the United States will, but China and Russia will stay out. I think that it is more likely that while the United States ties itself up in Israel, China will attack Taiwan, and the United States lacks the capability to fight multiple wars at multiple times.
So have you got anything to say to the poor people in Gaza who have been like literally a human sacrifice in all this?
Oh, it's genocide. It's war crimes. It's horrifying. They're exterminate. It's an extermination policy. And it is to steal Gaza's real estate, to steal the oil that's the gas, the natural gas that's offshore.
Is there any hope? Is there any hope for Gazans?
No.
I mean, can't we just like break the walls down, let them get escape? Because they're trapped in there, aren't they, in this slaughter?
They're trapped in the slaughter. If they leave, Israel wants to drive them out and take the land. So if they leave, they know that they will never be allowed back in. There will be no repatriation. And so that's very much what Israel is winning at this moment. But I don't think that Israel will continue to win, because Europe and the rest of the world will not do business with them.
Well, I know Europe will. Europe is. Europe's back.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that Europe really supports Israel anymore.
Well, the elite seem to. The other thing is, of course, they've got to try and stop these Palestinian men getting out of Palestine, because obviously they're going to join any kind of fight against the Israelis from neighboring countries. So it seems
they'll be going to Syria. They're not going to go to Syria.
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, so you've already sort of talked about it a little bit, but how do you actually see this all panning out? Where are we going to be in a few years' time if we survive it all?
I think there will be a major regional war where Syria will be. I think the jihadists who've just taken over the country are going to be using Syria as a launch point against Israel. I think that Israel will use the Golan Heights to try to stop them. But I think that there will be a low burning war that will just, that will end up driving, that will consume everything. I think that we've crossed the line we've already crossed the point of no return.
It's almost like Syria was there to try and stop this thing exploding, and now it's just going to explode. It's going to get worse. Anyway, look, Susan, I know you did a terrific book about your experience over there a while ago. I wonder if you could just plug that, and if you got on any social media and blogs and places like that people can follow you.
Well, I'm still blocked on Twitter. My book is called Extreme Prejudice: The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of Iraq and 9/11, and how the war on terrorism has been kind of falsified and manipulated and massaged for the media, and the Patriot Act. I still think that we're heading into a major regional confrontation. I think that that all the players who support the war in Syria have mistaken their victory over Bashar Assad, and they're going to reap what they sow, because now they've put into power the very jihadists who will be quite happy to use that territory to establish a ground army going into Israel, I think.
Now, look, you said a bit earlier, I mean, I was going to finish there, but we've got another little topic to cover before we go, which is the jihadis being a sort of legitimate part of Islam. But, you know, the Brits and the Americans, MI6 and the CIA, have really exploited this with the help of the Saudis and the Wahhabi version of Islam that's been grown up since World War II. There was actually Bitter Lake, wasn't it? This, I think it was either Truman or, no, Roosevelt, I think, that met with the, I can't remember his name, King Ab, oh gosh, the King of Saudi Arabia anyway, just before the end of the Second World War, to set up this kind of petrodollar deal. You know, the yes. Americans are taking over the British Empire. And by the way, oil is going to be the new, black gold, you know, after World War II. The interesting thing is how the jihadi movements, the early ones in the 1980s, in Afghanistan, for example, Operation Cyclone, how these were financed. And a lot of this was done, by drug money, hard drugs being peddled by, I'm not sure, was it CIA or whoever? Because I know that you dug out some fascinating information about the connection with the horrific Pan Am Flight 103 Lockerbie bombing in the late 1980s.
Yes, yes. The Lockerbie bombing had to do with heroin trafficking out of the Bekaa Valley, and they were using that to finance the jihad movement and finance the Lebanese civil war. So that, I think, you will see that the there will continue to be, the opium trade will continue to dominate this movement. I really think that we're looking at not a peaceful solution in Syria. I think that there is, I hope that I'm wrong.
Yeah, but well, look, I mean, I just think it's fascinating, this idea of using heroin money to finance this jihadi. Now, many of the Muslims that are going, you know, saying, I'm going to have to join this fight, you know, against those evil Israelis who are killing people in Gaza, blah, blah. It's all being framed as a Zionist versus Muslim thing. But actually, the Muslim version of this wouldn't be there if it wasn't for all this drug money. So it's almost as if there's a little sort of chink in the Islam scriptures somewhere, and somebody is just injecting this heroin straight into it, you know, saying, right, let's just make this happen.
That's how you get the money. That's how you get the money to buy the weapons for the arms dealing.
But most of them, of course, don't know that this is the origin of the money. And if they did know, they would have probably nothing to do with it. And what about 9/11? Because this is something, I mean, I was involved a lot in the 9/11 truth movement in Britain in the 2000s. We had a constant discussion about the various conspiracy theories to do with all of that. But one of them, of course, involved Israel. Do you think Israel was involved? Because there is evidence that they were in the 9/11 attacks.
There is some evidence that Israel was involved, that they knew about it, and to know and to create, maybe there's more hand in glove involvement. But I think that
it's a bit of a hot potato, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a hot potato. But they definitely knew about this in advance. So
Well, I mean, one of the things that really convinced me is a terrific article out there. It's called 9/11, Israel Did It, All the Proof in the World. And it's on the WikiSpooks website. It's actually fully referenced right the way through. But yes. One of the key things is you've got loads of people involved in the agencies that were supposed to be investigating the attacks, that were responsible in those attacks, are dual US-Israeli citizens. I found that quite amazing, going through this list. Another one. Crikey. A lot of these people are actually, they've got Israeli passports. And Netanyahu himself said, hey, this has been great for Israel. I think he then caveated it with something else at the time. But I mean, this was crucial, wasn't it, for allowing this political thing to emerge in the noughties, where the Americans and the Brits then did the invasion of Iraq. It's, well, we can march into any country we want to now.
Yeah, that the Israelis had seven countries that they wanted to destroy the independence and sovereignty and the leadership governments, Saddam, of the Assad. It was Syria, Libya, Israel, there were seven countries that they wanted to destroy so they could set up their greater Israeli state. And they've gone after every single one of them, and now they've won Syria. Syria was the final one.
Yeah, maybe. The idea, of course, of this greater Israel is we keep getting told, don't we, that, you've got to stop the Gaza and the Hamas, because if they Hamas are allowed to survive, they will spread like a cancer right across the world. Well, I wonder if it's the other way round, whether it's actually the Zionists and their very racist ideology that's the most dangerous thing, their genocidal policies that may spread from this. And, of course, this is another accelerationist idea, is that you accuse your enemy of doing exactly what you're doing, and this is also, of course, a psychological warfare technique. So anyway, look, Susan, if you can sum up, is there some light at the end of the tunnel here at all?
I hope for the best for the Syrian people. They are traditionally a sectarian, multi-religious state of tolerance and diversity.
Oh God!
And I hope they survive.
Well, that's going to be under threat now, isn't it? Right from now.
Right on from this moment on, that independence is under threat. If only because Turkey's going to take them out. Turkey and the caliphate. Yep. Yep. Mm. And that would be the least of their problems. If they only ended up as a Turkish controlled state, then that will be in that where the Kurdish people stop trying to create independent states and the United States gives up the military bases and the oil fields. Then that would be the best hope for the Syrian people. But I don't see that happening. I mean, I see this becoming a conflagration against Israel.
I mean, it's almost as if somebody somewhere is trying to turn the Holy Land into hell.
Yes. It's a good way to conclude it, yes.
Anyway, look, I mean, we've got to have some light at the end of the tunnel here. We can't just leave it like that. I do think for a start, many switched on.
Everybody.
Well, many switched on Jews have decided, look, let's just get away from here, like the Russians have, because there's obviously a major conflagration being planned. It's not a good place to be. Let's get out. Get out of Dodge, as some people like to put it. You know, let's get away from here. Of course, the Gazans can't do that. They're imprisoned right in the middle of the hellhole. But I think at the end of the day, the Israelis have completely lost any respect that anyone ever had for them, really, apart from people who are colluding with them. And you know what, Susan, I always look at these sorts of situations and think the only people benefiting for this and driving this are a tiny, tiny number. We have a massive, massive majority over them. And they're never, ever going to break the human spirit. They've tried in Gaza. They haven't broken the spirit of the Gazans. And actually, even if the Gazans get killed one by one until the very last one, they'll still never break their spirit, because human beings are actually able to cope in these horrifying situations. They will cry. They move on. And one of the most horrible stories I've heard recently is the one from one of the doctors who was working in Gaza, saying that the 5-year-old kid's coming up to him saying, "I want to die."
Oh,
you know, because all my people I love
genocide and extermination. The Israelis, that's what I mean to what I tried to say a minute ago. The Israelis have lost the support of the ordinary citizens across Europe. They don't have the support. They may have the support of the elite government officials, but it's gone now. They have squandered all of their power, and they're relying on Trump, but the United States is in decline. We're in very serious decline. We're looking at a $36 trillion debt. The BRICS nations are abandoning the petrodollar. We are not able, we're a paper tiger now. And Trump's going to try to put teeth back into it. And we'll see what happens. But I think that the world is changing.
Well, it is. What's your take on Trump? He looks a bit more human than a lot of the other leaders around the Western world.
I think that he's better than Joe Biden.
Yeah, but that's not saying much. Trudeau, you know, and our very own Starmer, the guy's a robot, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I look at him and I think, well, he's a Christian Zionist, so the Zionists love him. He's going to be all gung-ho for this World War III.
But he will also oppose the war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And he will oppose, I don't know, I think that he will be able to stop China from attacking Taiwan for a time. Mm. I don't know. I think the verdict is out on what's really going to happen right now.
anyway, I just think that, you know, it's important to understand that if you, once you get your head around these things, it's easier to deal with the horrors involved. And it really is, seems to me we're coming to the sort of epic battle between good and evil. You know, whatever's written about in the book of Revelation, you know, we've also got, by the way, we've also got these little microchips that we've got in our little cards. You know, we're starting to wave around bip, 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 bip here everywhere, that you will not be able to buy or sell unless you've got one of these in your hand or your forehead or something.
Yeah. And one of the good things about Trump is that he will not allow that to happen. Here in the United States, I think we've been saved from that. I think that freedom of speech, because of Elon Musk buying Twitter, even though I'm banned on Twitter, I'm still banned on Twitter. But theoretically, freedom of speech is back.
So anyway, look, Susan, just remind us of any places that people can find you and follow you, please.
Well, I am trying to get back on X, the X platform. My book is Extreme Prejudice, and you can get that on Amazon. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Susan.